Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, September 27th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Wow! I feel good!
yeah!
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I apologize that I am late. Circumstances that I had no control over. We had scheduled a conference call at 11 a.m. this morning with Omega Fields, and they've got a product out that I was first introduced to about 2 years ago. I attended the Bradley Caldwell, the BCI convention, Bradley Caldwell, I guess that's incorporated, up there in Hershey, Pennsylvania. It was a great trip. It was really fabulous, and we went up there with ManaPro. Bradley Caldwell wanted to stay there. They went all out. The signage for Chicken Whisperer was amazing. My jaw dropped when I walked into the big hall there that they had for the convention, and it was just CW stuff that was 10 feet tall. It was amazing, and I was very proud of that. But it was a great family trip. Caleb was pregnant, but Caleb had not arrived. But we love to take the train. We took Amtrak from Atlanta up to Philadelphia. We got off the train. We rented a car, a four-wheel drive SUV, because Pennsylvania in February. Need I say more? But we went over there. We had some time. We got him early enough. We went over and saw the Liberty Bell. Never seen the Liberty Bell ever, so that was a first. And this is the funniest thing. It's crazy. We were there at the actual Liberty Bell. We had walked through the museum. We got to the Liberty Bell. We're standing there, and, of course, I had my Chicken Whisperer gear on like I always do when I travel. And people started just staring at me. I was like, okay, I know that people recognize me or they know the Chicken Whisperer. I've gotten over that part. But they were just literally staring me down. So after the museum guy was done explaining about the Liberty Bell, this little group of folks ran over, and they were like, "You're the Chicken Whisperer." "The Chicken Whisperer?" "Yeah, yeah, from Atlanta." "Yeah, I live in Atlanta too, and I got chicks from your Chicks for Charity event." So here we were in Pennsylvania, up there at Philadelphia, at the Liberty Bell, standing there, right there at the Liberty Bell, and people come up and they're like, I attended your event there in Atlanta, the Chicks for Charity. I got six chicks. I love them. They're giving me eggs every day, blah, 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 blah." It was crazy. It is so fun to meet people on the road. It's one reason why we love to do it. We try to do it so much. But that's when I got first introduced to Omega Fields. When we went there, a huge, huge event, two huge ballrooms full. Now, what BCI is they're kind of a broker, if you will. So they carry a boatload of stuff. They invite all of their people that carry their products. So BCI carries and distributes, their distributor, distributes, they say, Omega Fields product. And so they invite basically all of the inventors and manufacturers of these products to this event, set up booths. So when you walk in, there's all these companies that carry all these different things, and they have all these products that they've developed and whatnot. Well, then what they do is they invite all of their stores that actually order from them. Mom-and-pop stores, big chain stores, whatever, that actually buy product from their big catalog, BCI. And so it's just a mecca of everybody there. And so it was great to be there because I got to meet both sides. So the mom-and-pop stores that may be interested in doing webinars with me or events, and then actually the makers of these things that may end up wanting to be a sponsor. So this was 2 years ago. I had an exclusive contract at the time, so we weren't able to assign Omega Fields. And then just recently they've re-contacted me back, and we're looking at doing something for 2013 with them. So it's a pretty neat product. Everybody's concerned about the quality of their eggs and wanting them to have more omega-3 fatty acids in them and things like that. They make a product, happens to be sold a lot of places, including Tractor Supply, that you don't have to change feeds to increase the omega-3s. You can just buy this bag of their, basically it's kind of from my understanding, a flaxseed mixture. And they talked about development today, and it's very unique. You have to do, it's not all created equal, basically. Anyway, so whatever feed you're feeding, whether it be Purina or ManaPro or Dewmore or Southern States or organic, or you make your own, you can just sprinkle this on the food and get that increased omega-3s for your eggs. So it's pretty interesting. Ah, BYP in the chat. Anyway, so that's why I'm running late. We had a went over an hour actually, and it was interesting. I kind of felt like I was being interrogated. So what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? And what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What kind of numbers do you have? What kind of this? Do you see this happening? Do you see that happening? And it's pretty good, but I'm used to it, and it was good. So I was kind of under the microscope there for an hour, and hopefully we can maybe pan something out with a couple of different advertising ideas with Omega Field. So we will see come 2013 what will pan out with them, but that's the reason why I was late, so I apologize. And let's see. Okay, there we go. BYP386, Tom down in Florida. Speaking of webinars, any coming up? If the deal with the USDA APHIS program, if that ends up continuing as their, you know, their national spokesperson, there may be a webinar coming up in November for National Bird Health Awareness Week. We've done one the last couple of years. We even did kind of a Twitter chat one year with them. So if there's going to be a webinar coming up, it's more than likely going to be, if I had to say which one's next, maybe the first week in November, if things pan out with USDA, we all get our act together and get organized, there may be a webinar that week. That would be the next one. Also, in this big contract proposal with Tractor Supply, it includes two webinars a year. One of obviously will be in the spring for their Chick Days events. And then one will be in the fall, which will incorporate both Chick Days in the fall, which they do a little bit about in select markets. Also kind of preparing your birds for winter. And so that'll be two a year with Tractor Supply. And then the other webinars I do are really just contractual. We may have a feed and seed store that can't quite afford, you know, times are tough. Can't quite afford an actual event with the Chicken Whisperer, which gets me there, puts me up in the hotel. Of course, when we get this camper in November, that will be a non-issue, and we'll be traveling a lot more. And fees and things, I understand a small mom and pop may not be able to afford that, but they may can afford what we charge for a webinar. So it's pretty much the same poultry workshop, but it's just via, say, through Skype. So they can see me, it's live, they can hear me, I can hear them, I can take questions after I go through the workshop, and that's much more affordable because they don't have to pay all the travel costs. So it's so we do those webinars, too, individually for feed and seed stores all over the country, and that's in part kind of what we're doing with Tractor Supply do. That contract with Tractor Supply would also include four week-long tours a year, and that doesn't include all the other tours that we do when we're invited personally by a feed and seed store or a company or something like that. So we do stay pretty busy spreading the chicken love. We don't just sit on the couch in our living room and post chicken pictures from Pinterest or whatever the heck it's called on our Facebook page. We actually hopefully do some good. We educate. We fight for chicken laws across the country. We travel and do workshops. We've got the book out. But I don't just sit at home and on my couch and, you know, drink coffee or tea and post Pinterest pictures on my Facebook page. So like a lot of others do. We want to be very proactive. We want to be there's a value there to the folks and spread the chicken love other than just posting pictures on Pinterest or whatever, however you pronounce it. So and having a blog that's written in the comfort of my own home, you know, I got to get out, got to meet with the people, talk with the people, educate the people, spread the chicken love. So, Pamela's like, what is Pinterest? And, yeah, you got that right, Jessica. Gotta love it. Hey, we got a great show lined up for everybody today. It's one of my favorites, so I'm very excited. And the topic today is fabulous. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And let me tell you, I practice what I preach. Y'all know that. People who have met me have come by my house before know that. I'm guilty. I've got to renew my subscription. Yes, I subscribe to the magazine. It's one of the only ones that I subscribe to, Back Home Magazine. And I just got a card in the mail, a little 5x7 index card that says it's time to renew. So I've got to do that. because it's very difficult for me, and many of you know me personally, to say, hey, it's a great magazine, you need to subscribe, and then I don't do it. That's just so utterly wrong and hypocritical. So out of my own pocket, and it's something I've done for the last couple of years, so I've got to renew my subscription. And now living on a homestead, it is a tremendous tool that I use here. Just like today's show with freezing produce for storage is tremendous because I do this on a regular basis. So any tips I can get today from Richard is going to be invaluable here for the homestead. We have a one-acre garden. We give away a lot of that in the garden just to be good stewards of the property and the land and do what we can to help our community. But we can an awful lot. Well, we don't can. Haven't gone down that road yet. I'm still a little chicken because I'm just paranoid about that a little bit. I know I shouldn't be. Maybe one of these days me and Jen will have some time to just sit down, educate ourselves, and just go for it. And then just, you know, but every time I'll eat beans, I'll be where, okay, maybe I won't, hopefully I don't get botulism. I hope we did this right. I hope that the cans popped and I got it at the right temperature and they sealed correctly because I know myself. Jen knows me. And even though if we spend all this money on canning equipment and jars and all that, it'll never fail. I'll pop open a jar, it'll pop, and I'll think, well, I hope it popped, and I hope it sealed good enough. And then I'll cook it, and then I'll be like, does it smell okay? And then the whole time I'm eating it, I'm like, I hope I don't kill my family because I did this wrong. So yes, my secret fear is coming out with canning. No matter how many times people say, oh, it's so easy, you don't have to worry about that, but just a little paranoid about that. I know it's been done for hundreds of years, canning, and you know, they had just right, you know, down the street from us, there's the old meat house thing. Old farmhouse, and they have the meat locker, the smokehouse, I guess it's called, behind, where they would just, you know, kill whatever meat, hang it up there, pour it in salt, and just let it sit out there. It'll be fine. So, I mean, you know, hey, I get it. But it's still something I'm a little paranoid about, whether it be not just canning meat, but canning vegetables. Christmas chick's like, stop worrying. It's not a big deal today. You get the right tools. You follow the directions. It'll be fine. I know one of these days, I promise, I'll go down that route of canning. But until then, it's blanching and freezing. And that's what we do. So we gather the produce. We just did this, our spring garden, spring and summer garden, squash and beans and peas and all the great stuff, corn and okra. And so we bring it in. We wash it really good. Then we cut it up, however we're going to cut it up, whether it be squash, you know, slicing the squash or, you know, cutting the very tip of the okra off or, you know, the peas, washing them real good, getting the sand, very sandy out there in the backyard, get the sand off of them. Get that hot water going, drop it in there for 3 minutes, pull it out, drop it in that ice water, get it back nice to, you know, and then put it in the whatever, you know, freezer bag, Ziploc. We don't really care about doing the names. It doesn't matter. Ziploc bag, sealing it real good, throwing it in the freezer. In fact, we had to buy a couple of freezers just so we had enough space for all of the stuff. So, again, today's show, meaningful to me. Hopefully I can learn a lot. Like, is there a better freezer bag? Should I invest in one of those sealer systems, you know? I forget what you call it, but the where you actually put the stuff in the bag and then hot seal it. Is that better than, say, a Ziploc bag when we're putting stuff in the freezer, if we're doing this on a regular basis? Would it be beneficial to go ahead and pay, what are they, $169, $225 for one of those sealer systems and to seal it and then put it in the fridge? Is there a better way to do it than what I'm doing it? So definitely looking forward to learning all about that today. So running right over here to the to the Facebook page over here to the it's been crazy, already running late because of that meeting, switchboard, and I see that Richard Frudenberger is there, publisher of Back Home Magazine, getting started with today's topic. So let's bring him on right now. Richard, welcome to the show. I think I hear Richard in the background. Are you there, Richard?
Yes, I am.
All righty, very good. No problem at all.
I'm out of the office at the moment, so there's other distractions going on.
I understand. Not a problem. Okay. Hey, tell me first off, how was the event there in Asheville a couple of weeks ago?
Pretty good. We had a lot of competition. Asheville has a lot of stuff going on in September, you know. So we did have some competition from there was a half marathon foot race, and there was a big beer festival, and there was a music going on and other stuff. But even with that, we had I thought pretty good attendance, and the vendors, a lot of vendors, and a lot of good good people. You know, a lot of good questions, a lot of engaged kind of visitors. You know, instead of sometimes it's just sort of you get what sort of comes through. But this was a very well organized event, so that, you know, we had a lot of good good people come through, and I was, you know, pretty pleased with it.
Oh, you there? Hello? Richard? Okay, let's see. Oh, and there he went. We had a bad connection. Oh, there he is. Call him back in right there. We must have dropped off there for a second. So let's bring him back live. There we go. Had a little technical difficulty there, but you're back live. And like I was saying, that so glad you had a success there in Asheville. Saw someone on Facebook that that was in there that weekend. It was up there, and I said, "Hey, you got to stop by, go check out the festival, and check it out," because I know that she was she would have thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'm glad that was a success. But today's topic: freezing produce for storage, something we do around here. So you've heard some of our questions that I've got. I'll try to get some questions from our chat room as well that maybe you can answer about, you know, hey, is it worth going out and buying one of these seal systems? Is there bags better than others? What about blanching and icing? And what about freezer temperature and things like that? So I am ready to learn, as many others that are listening out there in Radio Land.
Yes, no, it sounds like a pretty simple subject, but there's really a lot of elements to it,
mm-hmm.
As you brought up, and but not trying to scare people off, but the you know, the it's a lot easier than doing some of the other, or a lot less work than doing some of the other preservation methods, like you know, like canning or
yep.
or some of the other stuff. But you know, it's all about putting food up, no matter how you look at it. You know, the goal is to get your produce put up through the winter, and so you get your garden goodies up in a safe place and edible over the next three months or so, and you know, it covers a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of people are obviously aware of canning, you know, on top of that, you've got other newer methods like vacuum sealing, and of course freezing. And then some of the older methods are really getting some attention these days. So some of the traditional methods like fermentation and pickling,
right.
and salting,
mm-hmm.
and just a lot of stuff is mostly, you know, old European traditions,
yeah.
or maybe not even just European, but certainly other Asian and everything else.
And the dehydrating as well?
Yeah, dehydrating, and that's another one too, yeah. Freezing though is definitely, you know, 20th and 21st century stuff. So and it's really relatively simple. There are some differences between different types of food, which I'll go over. But before I did that, I just want to talk a little bit about freezers, because that's sort of important.
Awesome.
You know, on one hand you've got the, you know, the goal to put food up, but on the other hand, you've also got I would hope people would have a goal is to either A, how much energy they're using in doing this, and B, how much it costs. And so what I'm going to talk about a little bit first is just you know, either working with a freezer you've got or buying a freezer that'll do the job you want it to do. I guess what I want to say is that people may already have a freezer that they're using or want to use. And the only thing I have to say about that is if it's old, even though it still works, it may still work well and feel well and doesn't make noise and has plenty of room in it and all that stuff. If it's 10, 12 years old, it's going to probably be fairly inefficient and inefficient to the fact where you'll really be spending a lot of money keeping that food frozen. And so you may want to think about, if you have an older freezer, you may want to think about upgrading to a modern freezer, which is likely to be much more energy efficient. And then if you had the extra money to put into it, you might even want to look for a Energy Star rated freezer, which is a highly efficient freezer, which is also more costly to buy new than just a good normal freezer. So what I did want to mention, though, was like even in my own case, we're offered a nice little chest freezer, but again, it was fairly old and the seals didn't look that good on it. So I thought, between the seals and putting the money into the new rubber and then just that compressor running and the cost of which it would take over some months, figure that's probably not a good investment. Put that money towards a new freezer. If you're going to buy a new one, or even buy a used one that is new enough to be worth using, I would stick with a chest freezer over an upright freezer. And the reason for that is, with a chest freezer, when you open the door, the cold pretty much stays where it is in the box itself. It some will overflow, and you can't really see it come out, but you'll see this see the condensation. Mm-hmm. But when you open that top lid and fold it back, that cold dense air pretty much stays in the box. When you open a upright freezer, you open that door, all that cold just runs right out the box, right out the bottom of the box and onto the floor, and you can even feel it on your ankles.
Right.
And it takes all that energy to rebuild what you've lost every time you open the door. And not to say that you're be opening the door a lot, but every time you open it, you're going to suffer that that experience. So
somebody posted in the chat room, they said, does a freezer from 1971 count? They said, we have discontinued it because it took more electricity than the air conditioning.
Absolutely. And you know where that freezer can go? In my area, we have a great scrap iron dealer. He pays you $14 a hundred for the weight. So, that's probably the best place for that old freezer.
Now, since we're talking about freezers, you mentioned it, you may be covering it, and I apologize if you were. That was a big decision we had. Do we go upright? Do we do chest? We started looking at the chest freezers, then we started looking at the space, the square footage that it took of floor space in a smaller house, versus, an upright taking wall space. And then we looked at what was available, and then, organization. Yeah, upright, probably the more organized. I can probably get to more stuff a little quicker versus chest freezer, the big complaint when we were asking around. Stuff gets thrown on the bottom. You'll never see it for the next 10 years. Then you end up having to throw it out, what have you. So we started looking. We really didn't want to buy new, but we wanted to buy, used. We could have bought new. We were trying to save some bucks. And I looked around, and I was having such a hard time, and produce was starting to come in, Richard, and there's a store that was closing just right down the street. They were closing up shop, and they had a sale, and they had actually four freezers. They had an upright, and they had three chest freezers. They were smaller chest freezers, and we've got this big acre garden, and it was amazing. They said, you can go take a look at these freezers at the BrandSmart store. They're $360 each is what they were. They had three of them, and they wanted $100 a piece. So I ended up, I had the money at the time. I bought all three for $300, which was less than one new one at the BrandSmart. So we were being looked at. We were very blessed, and someone was looking out for us. Right now we've got one full. We've got the other one that will probably fire up here when the fall garden comes in. We'll start putting some things from the fall garden in the freezer. And then next spring we'll definitely have to utilize the third. I couldn't pass it up. But they're the chest freezers. And part of me still growing up with a upright, still the organizational issue. We bought some extra baskets to put all the peas in a basket and all the carrots, being OCD and everything like I am. But we really lucked out on that, and so far we've been pretty happy with those. So I guess that great point. I didn't know about that being upright. When you open it up, you lose more energy and more of the cold than as if it was a chest. So that's something I've already learned today.
Yeah, and the other thing I'm pointing out, with when you're buying three freezers as opposed to, say, one huge one, that's actually a pretty good idea, because let's say you have trouble with one of them, you know, at least you still have the other two. You can do some quick maneuvering and whatever. So, you know, one big freezer goes out and that whole freezer's out. So, you know, that's not a bad thought if people do stumble upon a deal like that.
They said in the chat room that Craigslist is a great place to look. I live in a rural area, so it was still very limited even on Craigslist. I did find a fabulous deal, and here's where you can find the deals, is it was up probably about a five-hour drive from here, maybe four-hour drive. So it was the biggest, I think, chest freezer they make at the Sears and the Lowe's. It was huge. And they said, I think it was like 100 or 150 bucks. Maybe it was 200. They said, you know, I'm moving across country. Can't take it with me. Won't fit in the hatchback. So, hey, first one here with whatever it was, 250 or 150, can take it. So if you can capitalize on some of those my loss, your gain type of things, then you can find some deals. But like you were saying, just watch out and make sure it's not an ancient one or it'll cost you in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. And you can read the you can read the tag. Now, sometimes people save on a used freezer. They may save the paperwork that came with it when it was
right.
new. Everybody knows you go into the store and they have the yellow and white tag with the black border. It's the federal, the Canadian government and the U.S. government both have a similar tag. It's how much energy consumption it'll cost you in a year as opposed to other models of a similar size, and how much kilowatt hours it'll consume in a year compared to other models of its size. So if you can access that tag, or you can go online, copy the model number down if you have the time to do that, or you have a phone that you can do it right on the spot, and you can look it up. You know, there's a couple of websites that wouldn't, just not very easy to find. And it'll tell you what that model number is expected to consume in the way of energy and cost on an average basis. And, you know, the way I look at it, unless you're a big game person, like you have a lot of venison or a farmer or part of a co-op or CSA where you buy half a side of beef or something like that at a time, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if it's most, but many people really don't need a huge freezer. They may not have a big garden, or they may not have a lot of game meat or whatever, because, you know, any hunter knows, and when you are using game, and you've got a lot all at once, and you will need a big freezer. But what I did is I looked at my little, when I bought my refrigerator freezer, my regular in-the-house refrigerator freezer, I purposely chose the smallest one I could just because of the energy consumption. And so the freezer portion of that is only about 5.5 cubic feet, which is relatively small. So I figured, well, if, you know, I have a little bit of game meat in there, but not, you know, not tons of it. So what I do is I just out looking, actually right now, out looking for a reasonably sized small chef's freezer that is at least that size and bigger, and, you know, preferably bigger than that, but maybe not too much bigger. So I found one that I really liked. It had an annual, it's a 7.5 or 7.7 something cubic foot freezer.
Gotcha.
With about $30 a year in energy consumption. That's only about, at my electricity rate, that's only about 218 or 220 kilowatt hours a year, which, you know, for something as consumptive as a freezer, that's really not that bad. And $30 is not that bad for being able to preserve. Imagine how much you'd have to spend to go out and buy canned food or whatever in the winter, you know, to equal as much as you're going to put up in that freezer. So, you know, this is 7.5 cubic foot, $30 a year to run it. And, you know, my rate here, I don't know, it's probably 13 plus cents an hour, a kilowatt hour. And so, you know, you can figure it out how much it's going to take. It's only about 220 for the whole year. So when you start dividing that by 12 months, it's really a minuscule amount.
Okay.
And, you know, well worth it. So that's
7. What was the cubic feet?
You can see it's 7.5, which is going to be small for a lot of people. But
that's the exact size we got. 7.4 cubic feet was the size of these three chest freezers we got.
Yeah.
Again, I'm looking at it right now at BrandSmart 359, and we got all three for 300. So I couldn't turn that down. But so I'm right there with you. Same size as you got.
Yeah. And you figure mine costs like brand new on sale with three. $320, you know, $320.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not bad. The smaller ones maybe run $289, you know, for say a five and a half cubic foot. So, you know, if you're only one or two people, the little one probably be fine. And if you need to go up, most family sizes ones are like 12 and 15 cubic feet, but that's a pretty big freezer, and that's going to run you close to $100 a year for running it. So, but that may be worth it. I mean, when you start looking at the price of buying food, it may be worth it. Now, of course, with the freezer, and that's about the last thing I'll say about the freezer until we get into food, is you got to think about power outages. And you know, once you've got the freezer and you start counting on it, you would be very smart to think about a dedicated, but maybe not a dedicated generator, but if you needed to have even a small generator just to run that freezer for the day or so that you're going to be out of power. Around here, it could be anywhere from one day to a week before the power lines can be fixed, because we're in the mountains and it's pretty treacherous in the winter. So, you know, you got to think about fuel and energy for that period. The other option is to possibly just have a backup, a relative friend, someplace where you can take your frozen goods and put them in the truck and, you know, cart them on into town where they do have power and just stick them in somebody's freezer for a week. And, you know, then at least you're saved. But you don't want to lose all that investment because you don't have any power.
Let me ask you this. You said you were going to start to wrap it up, and we haven't mentioned this, but I had got a lot of information from people. I didn't really do research too much, but from people, because I think this would be a big decision, from what I've heard. It may just all be a wives' tale hearsay, but that you also have to make that decision if you want manual defrost or auto defrost. And I heard across the board that as far as freezer burnt, quality of your food, moisture of the food for long-term, say, freezing, that the manual defrost was the way to go. Something to have to do with the fan and the moisture and putting moisture in or out or whatever it does. I'm not an expert on freezers, but that for it would be better long term and better for the food and freezer burnt and crystal stuff if it was manual defrost versus the auto defrost. Do you have any information on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely correct. The first of all, the auto defrost is going to be more complicated and more expensive and more costly to fix and more opportunity to break than the manual defrost. That's one thing. And the second thing is, just as you said, the mechanism by which the automatic defrost works is it basically has heating coils in the freezer. So you're sort of defeating the purpose. I mean, you're heating an area that's supposed to be frozen, then you're blowing warm air over, or maybe not warm air, but you're blowing warmer than frost over certain surfaces within the freezer. So you're basically sort of defrosting a portion of it and then asking it to refreeze again. It's just sort of a, doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it's very convenient, but it's just not, from a standpoint of energy consumption and just initial cost, it's just not the way to go. And the other way with the manuals, you have the choice. Of course, you have to make that choice, but you have the choice of doing the manual defrost, getting rid of the ice and starting all over again. That's usually not, in a smaller freezer especially, it's not a big deal. And one other thing I wanted to mention is I'm going to get into the foods here in a minute, but I just wanted to mention, as far as your organizational skills, putting things in separate containers that can be color coded too, that really helps. You know, the orange basket has peaches and the red ones have tomatoes, whatever. The other thing is people can draw a map. I mean, really a chart or a map as to where stuff is in the freezer. So, you know, on the third layer at the bottom, there's the meat or whatever, you know, and you can make a sort of a chart where everything is before you open the door. You know where to look, so that, and you make sure it goes back in the right place. So you have minimized the amount of time that you have with the door open, and you pretty much find what you need and get it out of there and close the door. So, you know, that's a really good resolution to some of the problem of just dumping food in a chest freezer and leaving it sit like that. So, you know, that's a good solution.
Okay, perfect. I'm OCD, yeah, but I still don't quite am at the point to have a map for my freezer.
Well, it doesn't have to be.
I understand what you mean.
It doesn't have to be a map. You know, it doesn't have to be a detailed map of scale and you know, so many kilometers to the peach. But you know, you can do things within.
I like the color coding.
That's a great idea. Yeah, and you can buy those little cheap plastic or whatever they are, nylon baskets, right, or whatever, and you can get them at the store, Rubbermaid stuff or whatever they are, you know, that would fit in there. Just a good, you know, good choice.
Got ours at the dollar store.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, that's it. Let's get on to the food, because there's a little bit of difference between different kinds of food, and that's some of this stuff sort of interesting. I think we were talking about hard cider and apples and stuff last time, and you know, apples and apple pulp and slices can freeze very nicely, but some things actually take different procedures than others. So you know, let me just go through some of this. You know, maybe step by step, or fruit by fruit, or item by item, I guess is a better way, and we can look at it. And a lot of this involves using a cookie sheet. A lot of people don't do this; they may dry the material, whatever. But it's really convenient if you just lay out a cookie sheet and let your produce or your fruits or whatever freeze on the sheet. In the freezer, like that. And then once they're frozen, you can remove them from the sheet, because if the sheet allows it to not bunch up and allows the moisture to evaporate off the item, and they won't freeze, things will not freeze together, which can cause a problem, a difference in between the freezing, you know, the surface of one untouched part as opposed to the two pieces that are touching together. They actually freeze at a different rate, so that can cause some problems in separating them and everything else. So if you put items on a cookie sheet and freeze it in the whole as a sheet in the whole freezer like that, spread out, it's going to be much better off. Part of the operation of a freezer, you know, obviously it gets things cold and freezes them, but one of the biggest functions of the freezer is not so much to freeze, but to get the moisture out of there, so it can freeze dryly, not freeze moistly. If that makes any sense, it removes as much water as it can from the item, and then freezes it. And that makes it much easier for both you and the freezer.
Have you ever done that? I'm thinking, based on all this freezing we did this past season, logistically speaking, that would be impossible for me to even consider with all the peas and all the stuff that we had to freeze it.
Things like peas don't have to be done like that.
Okay. Squash.
So yeah, you're right. You would have to dedicate a section of the freezer or whatever and do a little bit at a time to do it that mm-hmm. way. And it is definitely more time consuming. Go ahead.
Would that step, based in cause and effect, I guess here, would that step, if someone, like I got an extra freezer, so if I chose to do that with certain items, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and I've got this other freezer plugged up and I've got it ready, if I wanted to try that with some things, would the time and labor to do that, would I see that on the other end? Would it last longer? Would the food be fresher? Would it taste better? Is that extra time worth it, and how would it be?
I think basically what you'll find is it probably has a better consistency. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure it would taste better, but basically what you're buying by putting time into it up front is the convenience of using it at the back end more than anything else. Then maybe secondarily it may just be the taste part. I mean the fact that they don't stick together when they're frozen as a clump is going to just be helpful in convenience and probably in the consistency of the food, because some foods don't do well when they're because they're freezing at different rates when they touch.
Right.
You know, this outside is going to be freezing at a different rate than the parts that's touching, and that'll probably show up later in just inconsistency. But really, it's more convenience. And but let me just go through some of the things: apples, peaches, pears, those kind of fruits that are sort of pethy, or well, they're not supposed to be pethy, but they're sort of the way the structure of the fruit is, and the fact they're round. What you do with them is you want to wash them, take the seeds out, and you want to slice the fruit. Like with apples, of course, you'd slice them. You can chop them if it's other, like a pear or something, you could slice or chop, I guess. But ideally then, just arranging whatever you've cut up onto a cookie sheet and freezing them as a flat arrangement. And then once they're frozen, transfer them into a freezer bag. And that really works well. With all those round fruits like that, things that are easily, you know, cut up, and then also you can stretch that process to things like pasta, like ravioli and things like that. I mean, that if you homemade, those kind of things, you can individually set them out and freeze them like that, and it mm-hmm. makes it just makes it easier in not having them all clumped together. Now,
is there
I
an advantage?
Far,
yeah, is there an advantage, or just you talked about slicing and dicing, is so it popped into my head. Is there an advantage, disadvantages, good or bad, based on the thickness of a lot of these things that we may be putting up, a thicker slice, a half an apple, or several smaller slices? If there's more, I guess if I'm leaving the skin on or not, I guess it wouldn't matter. But, for example, if I have a half an apple, then a lot of the inside of that apple is not being exposed to say, whatever, versus if I slice that half apple into seven pieces, I've got now many more areas of exposure. Does it matter?
Yeah, it's probably better to cut it thin, not too thin. I mean, not too thin where it's gonna be. If you cut it too thin, it's probably gonna draw too much moisture out. But yes, in cutting into a thickness where the freezing can occur more quickly, as opposed to a big chunk where it's gonna freeze the outside but take longer to freeze the inside. You're probably better off just in keeping the consistency of the fruit when it's taken out at the other end. Now, for a lot of stuff, that doesn't matter because you're going to puree it or process it somehow or bake it in the pie or something where the consistency may not be a big factor, you know. But I would just say, in general, by slicing it to a thinner slice, you're going to have better results than leaving it in a big chunk.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You know, again, I'm sure somebody can find an example that's not the case, but, you know, just in general. I did want to mention one thing about freezer bags. My experience in this, and with a lot of other stuff, in beekeeping, you know, just putting sugar water and feeding the bees or anything like that, I prefer, I'm not even going to mention the brand names because I don't know who makes what, but I prefer the double finger locked type strips as opposed to the zipper. The zipper has that little tab that actually looks like a zipper, and I'm sure they'll work, but I mean I just prefer the security and the feel, the positive feel, without the potential for an end leak on the kind that's just that double strip that you run your finger on and you know it's all locked, and that pretty much is the kind of freezer bag that I would use. So I just want to throw that out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I know, you know, people are probably going to ask about that, I think you had mentioned some other stuff earlier about vacuum bags and stuff like that. But right in this particular discussion, we're just talking about going to the store and buying gallon or whatever size freezer bags with the double strip and doing it that way. Now there are kits, as you know, there are bag, you know, self sealing bag kits, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that, but that's another investment.
Food saver, that was my question.
Yeah.
Is it real? I mean, $229, then I got to buy these bags that are probably more expensive than a good old Ziploc double seal freezer bag that's a little thicker, has the double zip that we were talking about. Worth it, not worth it?
Yeah, it just depends on how much you do. If you're gonna really have a big garden, and you, especially people who maybe do a community or maybe not community but neighbor, you know, where you might have a couple neighbors that might do a putting up day or something, or you just have a big garden, it probably may be worth it to go out and get the fancy one. But I bought my ceiling thing for $15 at the Habitat store or something like that, and the bags were not that expensive. I got a bunch of bags with it, and then to replace the bags, it's a name brand model, and to replace the bags are like, you know, $7 for so many of them, whatever. So it's really not that, it wasn't that bad, but, you know, you have to think about it. If you really do want to spend $200+ on a new one, and you know, you ought to be bagging or putting up a lot of food if you're going to go that far. So
okay.
that's but it's convenient. I mean, they do seal well, and they they're probably cheaper in the long run per, you know, over many years. It probably is a bit cheaper, but I just go down to the store and get the zipper things, you know, or the regular lock bags. So, okay, let's talk about bananas. That's another good example. And I hadn't really thought about this, but one of our writers here, just she freezes the banana, the entire banana, just as a frozen banana with the skin and everything. And then when she goes to thaw them, she just makes a slit down the center with a knife, and then the meat will come right out of the skin. And then you can prepare your bananas as mash, because that's what they're going to be very mushy after the freezing process. So if you want to make banana bread or muffins or whatever, then it's already half the work's done for you because it's already sort of mushy. Just continue to make the paste out of it, and and that's it. So it's really not a whole lot of work to the banana. Just freeze it as a unit. Peppers, you want to wash them, and either wash them and then freeze them whole, or you can cut them into sliced long pieces or even chunks, and you can put them straight into the bag because they really don't retain a lot of moisture. You do want to dry them, of course, before you at least with a towel before you freeze them. But that's one veggie that does not have to be laid out and dried and frozen on the tray or whatever. Just stick them in the bag as long as they don't have too much water in them, and you can do it that way. Or if you want to, you can freeze them. If they're whole, you can put them on a sheet and freeze them as separate units before you put them into the bag for freezing them. So that's a fairly convenient way.
I've never freezed bananas. If you freeze bananas when they thaw, are they not just mush? Like you want to put
are.
It in a – so you'd use it for cooking bread or
only
cakes?
Only for bread
or
muffins. Okay. Yeah, only for the kind of things where you can mush them anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't come out as a nice firm banana anymore once you've frozen them. They're just mush. So yeah, you're reserving the banana freezing just for muffins, breads, and puddings and things like that. So that's that. Let me see what else. What other people like? Tomatoes. Now the tomatoes are fairly easy because you can wash them whole. Cut out the stem part, the head where the stem comes out, and just remove that, and then freeze them whole on a cookie sheet, and then put them in a bag. The other easy way to do it is to make a puree out of it and freeze it as tomato sauce. I mean, that's a real common thing to do. You can basically just make your tomato sauce and freeze them in, flatten the bags out. You don't want to fill the bags too full initially, because then they won't they won't be flat when they're frozen, and if they're not flat when they're frozen, they're going to be harder to store, because when they're balls, rounded, they don't fit well, they don't nest very well. But when they're flat, you can stack a lot of them in there. So you can either chop them up and make puree out of them, or just freeze them whole. And a little trick here, which a lot of people I'm sure know, when they're frozen and when you remove it to unfreeze it, you can just run it under cold water and the skin's going to peel right off the tomato. So you can make whatever you're going to do off of that with the skin gone, and from there you can do whatever you need to. So that's that works out pretty well with tomatoes. But I find it easier. The easiest thing to do really is to make a sauce first and just freeze them as sauce, because that's going to store well, pack well, and freeze well. And they're so convenient when you take them out, because you've got X amount of sauce. Then if you need one or two bags or four bags, whatever it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what else we hear. Kind of look for some other
is there things. Is there a particular I've always read I did again I say research talk to folks, look some stuff up online, is there a particular temperature? I've always showed zero should be kind of the freezer temp that would be optimum for freezing. Do you concur? Do you have a temperature that you use, and why?
I think for once, just, and it was totally for an experimental thing I was doing with a fuel. I put a thermometer in there, and it needed to be like 30 below. And I'm not even sure I got to that level. My experience has been that zero is a good number, and as far as food goes, I don't have any other options. I mean,
okay.
That's
the number
that
I saw most was zero. So
yeah, and I don't know. I don't remember. I know my freezer just didn't get down too far below zero. It may have gone 10 below, but I don't know. That'd be interesting to find out. What ranges freezers work at.
And one last thing. My understanding too, maybe, and I know it's going to be different for everybody, different based on temperature and ambient temperature, but I've always kind of another impression and heard that if the power goes out, you probably got 3 days if you don't open it before things maybe start thawing.
Yeah, that's about 2 to 3 days. 2 to 3 days is about right. And I know that from experience. you know, after like 2 days, I figured, well, it's about time to check and see if I need to move this stuff to, you know, another household. And the stuff was still hard, so I figured, oh, good, let's close the door real quick and then try it at three. And at three, it did start, the edges started to get a little weird. And the other thing, while you're on the subject, talking about ambient temperatures and stuff, if you can put that freezer in a place that is on the north side of the house or otherwise in a cool place on a cement floor if you have it, or in a part of the house that doesn't have windows or has very limited light, coolness, darkness, hard floor, you know, a flat floor if possible, a place where there's not a lot of traffic, that's going to be, mine is the garage, which happens to be on the north side of the house, so it's, and the garage is used more of as a workshop, so I don't have the door open going in and out with the cars and all that stuff, so it's a really good place. It's definitely probably, you know, 15 degrees cooler than the rest of the house, if not more, in the summer. And in the winter, it's really a great place because it's, you know, it can be down pretty close to freezing in the winter because they don't have any heat in there. So, you know, it's a great place to store. You know, your freezer will not have to work very hard to freeze in a place like that. Mm-hmm. So and that's a nice thought. And, you know, even a protected outdoor, at least in the winter, a protected outdoor porch or breezeway or something where it's not going to get rained on and not get a whole lot of humidity on it, but it's protected from the weather, but it's still cold. That would be another good choice if you can swing that. You know, that's always a nice thought. You know, you get a light out there, maybe a good roof, and maybe it's screened in or something, but you're not going to get a lot of water or rain blowing in there. That's, you know, that might be a good place for it, a back porch somewhere. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about beans a little bit. You know, easy way to freeze them, wax beans, green beans, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. You want to cut them, wash them, and cut them into pieces, you know, 1-inch, 3/4-inch pieces, and you want to blanch them. I know you've said blanching before. Mm-hmm. Always a good idea, but not absolutely necessary, but blanching is just, you know, you get water boiling really well and just drench them in there for about a minute and pull them right out and immediately dump them into as cold ice water mm-hmm. as you can get them. And then let them cool and dry them. And that's just a blanching process. And as I said, you know, it's not a absolute necessity, but it will mainly, what we're doing with that is to extend the life of the freezer life mm-hmm. Of the beans and other things that are blanched. And also it imparts a better texture when you do pull them out of the freezer.
Doesn't that, the process of that apparently, pardon me, kill some enzymes that would help speed up the breakdown process by doing the blanch, or is that just again theory and hearsay?
That's my understanding. I don't know for a fact. It's a good question. It's a good letter for Back Home Magazine. Probably it's an excellent letter because we can do research or find a vet. You know, we vet a lot of the articles or questions and stuff.
Right.
You know, somebody who really knows. So you know, that's a good question, and I believe that is probably correct, but I've also heard people adding something to the blanching water, like vinegar or some other mm-hmm. material in there that's a, you know, organic or natural substance. You know, I wouldn't be putting something weird in there, but that may help help color and mm-hmm. say, you know, helps maintain color and consistency.
Richford Ritz asked in the chat room. She said she's tried freezing green beans, but they turned to mush when she thawed them. Does the blanching prevent that from turning to mush? I've never had a problem with the green beans, that issue. I'm trying to think if I've had anything. I know that the squash, being it has a much softer inside than, of course, the skin outside, when I thaw those. But, of course, blanching, like I said, we blanch for 3 minutes. That's our magic number. And then we actually immediately to the ice to where it's all back down to nice and cold. And I'll say, I've seen folks that dry and recommend that. As soon as we actually pull it up out of the ice water and all the temperatures back down to that cold, the temperature, no, there's no real more heat, then we'll shake it out and try to get a lot of the extra water out, but then we'll just put it directly into the bag, seal it, and put it in the fridge. If we had to dry, it would be... I couldn't even imagine, kind of like setting things out on the pan with the amount that we do from a 1-acre garden. I just couldn't see it being feasible for us. Of course, if you've got the small backyard garden, again, there are a lot of things I'm sure that, you know, you could do to make things better, fresher, more consistency, and things like that. So, but yeah, we blanch to kill the enzymes that may that we've read that may help prevent the breakdown process in the freezer. But for Brits and Grits, like the inside of the squash may be a lot softer, may not be mush, but when we thaw it out, but we only blanched a little bit, so it still has its consistency, and the skin is still holding that round piece of sliced squash. And of course, you know, when you cook squash, it's going to fall apart anyway, so that's irrelevant. But I haven't had the problem with green beans. But I've talked to many people who don't even blanch. They just wash it, freeze it, and they're done. Go ahead. No, please go ahead. I was going to say, like yesterday, for the first time, I've been trying to make biscuits, decent homemade biscuits for years, and I finally, in fact, in the chat room, BYC sent me a recipe, and it's been fabulous to where I can now make biscuits I'm proud of. Well, yesterday, when I make a full batch or a double batch, and we with just the two of us, by the end, I'll end up throwing away a few or go and give them to the chickens or the goats, or I hate to do that, but they'll start to get the little tiny little mold spots on them, and so, you know, and I can pick it off, and I've eaten them before. But so what I did yesterday was I made a double batch, but then once doing the cookie cutter to get the, I put them in the freezer. So now I think I cooked 9 last night, and then I put 8 in the freezer. So now, and I haven't tried it. I'm gonna try it now. Where when these one the fresh ones that we have and already cooked and everything are done, in the morning, because you know you can buy frozen biscuits. I'm gonna take them out, put them on the cookie sheet, put them in the oven at whatever 350, and see how they do. So I'm experimenting with that. Yes, you can buy the Pillsbury and the Aunt Bee's or whatever frozen round discs of dough, and people love them, and they are pretty good. My parents get them occasionally, but I'm going to try it here with my homemade biscuits from scratch. So I'll let everybody know how that turns out. And I got those in the regular freezer, not the deep freeze, but so I'm freezing the biscuits to see how they work. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt that. I thought it was kind of relevant.
Yeah, no, it is. It was, and you know, we're just going. I'll have to agree with you. Putting the blanching process really is there to, as I said, to help with the texture at the other end, and obviously make it last a little longer. And here, I found this interesting because I was just looking at some of the other root vegetables. Now, you know, you've got potatoes, carrots, and other, you know, other root type, what we would consider root type vegetables. Same deal. You're going to wash them, you peel them, you cut them into small, even pieces, and again, you're blanching, but you are blanching for a longer period of time. Remember, I said 1 minute for the for the beans, but for the root vegetables, which is a denser, meat, you're going to be doing the 3 minutes. So
gotcha. Okay.
You know, there you go. So, right. And I'm sure someone can do research and get into some very, very specific times and experiences with, you know, more specific crops. There's some excellent books out there on, various root cellaring techniques and other ways, and not that we're putting things up in a root cellar, but it sort of describes vegetable by vegetable or fruit by fruit what keeps how and why and what may be served by what technique, you know, better than some other technique. So with the blanching and the root crops, your extension, your three minutes as opposed to 1 minute is going to be the way to go on them. And then you put them in the bag and away you go. Peas are another thing that people will want to freeze, and you want to remove them from the pod and put them in the put them in the freezer bags right away. And you can blanch the entire pod and all if you want to keep them that way. But they would have to be blanched, and that again will keep your keep your texture attractive at the end of the takeout period when you come out at the end. Squash, I'm not even sure we have to talk about that because people have so much of it and so used to it. But you want to take your winter squash and peel it and seed it, and then cut it into thin slices, and then you can just put them into the bags and freeze them like that. But the winter squash and the summer squash doesn't really freeze well, unfortunately, and that's usually what we all have so much of. It just gets mushy and doesn't carry well through the season. So, you know, what I do a lot with that is to give it to the chickens, and I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
So they enjoy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I left something out. Oh, yeah, here's some notes I took on berries. Grapes and berries and cherries and that kind of thing. You want to pit the cherries first, But again, that's a good candidate for the cookie sheet method. You know, just washing them, patting them dry if you have to, or just allowing them to dry and then arranging them on a flat sheet and freezing them, and then just stick them into the bag. And with the strawberries, of course, you may want to chop them or even puree them before you freeze them. And of course, that makes it more convenient to store. But they don't have to be cut or pureed to freeze them. You just freeze them whole if you want to.
Gardens. onions and garlic has been a topic in the chat room. People are asking, what about freezing onions and garlic?
I was thinking about that too, because I don't see anything on that, and I'm not really thinking that they do well. I know in tomato sauce where I've made sauce and the complete, you know, with big hunks of garlic and onion, they did not come through the process very crispy at the end, you know, at when I unfroze them. I don't know. That would be a good question out there. Maybe somebody else can answer it out there. I have a feeling that possibly that may be they may just not have the texture that you want in the process.
The garlic, I've never done garlic. I promised Arlena, who comes on Wednesdays, that I would do garlic this fall, and I was kind of disappointed that I have to plant it like late fall here, and I don't even get to reap the benefits until summer. I was like, that's the whole area that I won't even be able to utilize for all these months just to get a little garlic. But I've frozen onion. But basically, the onions I froze is that I will dice it. You know, I'll get that little thing out, and I either dice it with a knife or get one of those little choppers that you push the little thing down a million times, and it dices them, and then I'll put them in the Ziploc, and I won't blanch them or anything. I just peel it, dice the heck out of it, or chop it into little squares with a knife, put it in the Ziploc bag, throw it in the freezer, and I've had great success with that. I'll pull it out, and I put that in, like, some of my green peppers, bell peppers. I'll put those in what's called a Ziploc. They're not freezer quality, but they're just Ziploc, and they're the snack bag, so they're about a quarter or a half the size of, say, a Ziploc sandwich bag, and so I'll just put the onions and peppers in those size bags. I can pull out one for, say, a meatloaf, or I can pull out one for, or maybe two if I'm doing a big casserole, but I've had great success freezing onions, no problems, but I've never tried garlic.
Yeah, and maybe putting them in a sauce and the acid you know, that kind of thing might break it down more, and that's why I've had not so much great luck, but that's good, and that's what we're here for, is to sort of share ideas. So that's now I'm making notes as I go by, because I'm trying to think. I'm going to look this up.
I will say it was long-term storage. It was something like the first time I tried it, I had some onion left over. I didn't need a whole one, so I put it in one of the smaller, again, snack bags in the freezer, and I would say it was used within 2 months. So this was definitely not, say, a year long. I can't vouch to any experience with that, but I have done the peppers and the onions before, but I would say within a 3 month period, I had no problems with it.
Yeah. Well, that's sure. That's long enough. That's great.
Okay.
So that's about it for me. I don't think of anything else I can, you know, I know we could probably do a whole show on various ways of putting up food.
Right.
Other ways, like vacuum. In fact, that may be a good idea at some point. Mm-hmm. Vacuum sealing, and that's always intrigued me. Vacuum sealing and some of the more traditional ways are very interesting and very, very popular now. Resurgence in fermented foods. I mean, that's really, really gotten some attention. You know, that may be something for a future day, you know.
Because that would include even more, not just, you know, going out and buying a food saver and using it to seal and then put in the freezer, but also, you know, for long-term storage, for your 30-year storage or 20-year or whatever, using, say, the 5-gallon buckets and the Mylar bags that you put the food down in, these Mylar bags. Normally you won't see that number 10 cans for long-term storage, but the bigger 5-pound buckets, even though they're a food-grade bucket, they'll get the Mylar bag, drop it down in the bucket, they'll fill it with the rice or the beans or the macaroni or whatever, freeze-dried, dehydrated, what have you, and then they'll drop, an oxygen absorber in there, you know, seal that up, that Mylar bag up. And then, I couldn't tell you, I guess, if the oxygen absorber goes in the bag before you seal it, or if it goes actually outside of the bag in the 5-gallon bucket. And then they seal that, and then for, you know, 20, 30-year storage. In fact, those oxygen board, I can get pictures right now. When we bought a pallet load of long storage food, 30-year stuff, when they delivered it on the pallet in the forklift, I had the big 5-gallon buckets. And everybody knows what a plastic food grade 5-gallon bucket is. They're pretty darn stout. Well, I thought that I had some damaged buckets because they were basically almost triangle shape. And I thought, well, did the forklift hit it? Did the heat, you know, mess it up in shipment in the back of this truck? What's wrong? I've got this bucket that's warped. And come to find out that the oxygen absorber actually sucking that oxygen out. That's how much power these things had. Little sheet of oxygen absorber had these 5-gallon buckets. And you know how pretty stout they are. Try to just kind of bend them with bare hands. Were sucked in on 2 or 3 sides of this 5-gallon bucket. It was truly amazing, the power of just a little oxygen absorber in a 5-gallon bucket. But they're hard as a rock. You hit them, it's like hitting a stone, and because it just sucked that some, not all the buckets, but a few of them were sucked in. So yeah, we can talk about topics like that in the future. We can add that to the list, and we appreciate you coming on as always. One of my favorite shows. And as always, before you leave, if you'll tell us how we can continue all the goodness of Back Home Magazine by subscribing, which I need to do and renew.
yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, it's easiest way to do it. We're online. It's backhomemagazine.com. Easy to remember, backhomemagazine.com. And if you want to call us and get a real live person who English speaking native, we're at 800-992-2546. That's 800-992-2546. And you know, we have 1 year, 1, 2, and 3 year subscriptions, and we actually are having a pretty big back issue sale now going on.
Oh, wow.
Right now and through the end of the year. And also our holiday special sales will be taking place November 1st, so people can look online at that point. Coming up,
will the sale coming up in November be for subscriptions, like maybe a discount for the year or 2 year? Okay. And then is there a way they can go and is it online, or do they call if they're wanting to look at all the back issues and say, ooh, I'd like to have that one with those topics?
It's all online.
All online, right?
Just go right online, and we can actually have a searchable database, so you can figure out what topics are in what issues, and then there's also a big list of every issue and what's in every issue, more or less in a table of contents format, so you really get some detail. And then you can just either order it there or call and order it. As I said, right now we have a special sale going on for the back issues, because as we print more magazines, we have less and less warehouse space, basically, and we need to sell more, so it's a great opportunity. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks, I guess, the next date is.
Yep, that sounds great. Let's see, 2 weeks will end up being, I think the 11th of October. So good tidings to you until then, and we look forward, as always, to having you back in a couple of weeks. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, well, thank you, Andy. We'll see you then. Bye.
Thank you. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers.
Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Treats for chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics. Non-toxic bug relief. Treats. Organic snacks and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us. I apologize about the little extra long commercial break. I got so interested and involved in the topic today because it affects me so much. And Richard did such a great job. I love his shows. That I just completely, we just went through right through the 1 o'clock break. Normally, we of course we have the commercial break right after the beginning. Logo, the song and the introduction, we have a little commercial break there. Then we normally do host chat, and then we bring our guest on. And then so we normally have a commercial break around the 1 o'clock and then around this time as well. So I had to make up a little extra time there for since we missed that 1 o'clock break. But I hated to interrupt, and to be honest, I was so involved in the topic, I just completely forgot about the 1 o'clock break. So I apologize for that little lengthy ad spot there, but very important. The sponsors keep this show on the air, and we appreciate them. And I heard from Brinsa yesterday, talked to them yesterday, and they have gotten a tremendous amount of new customers through the radio show, through Facebook and Twitter, as far as using our coupon code. I was really surprised at how many people are supporting them through our radio show and using our coupon code there at Brinsa, which happens to be Whisper. In fact, most of our sponsors that have a code use the coupon code Whisper, where you'll get, I think, 10% off your entire order. RandallBurkey.com does that. RandallBurkey.com, 10% off your entire order with Whisper. Brinsa does that. Treats for Chickens right now has a special offer just through, I think, this Saturday. It ends this Saturday at treatsforchickens.com, but it's a tremendous value. If you use the coupon code Whisper just through this Saturday at treatsforchickens.com, you get 25% off your order there. So that's tremendous, 25% off. Just use the coupon code WHISPER. That's at Treats for Chickens. They've got a product called Chicken Crack. I think it's called Crack for Chickens, and it's a treat that your chickens are more than likely guaranteed to actually love. But thanks again, Richard Frudenberger, for coming on. Great topic, as always. He joins us the second and fourth Thursday of every month. And like I said earlier before we came on, if you missed it, it bothers me right now that I just got a card in the mail that said my subscription had expired. So it's hard for me to say, hey, it's not hard for me to say it's a great publication and I learn a lot from it and you too should subscribe. It's not hard for me to say that, but it's hard for me to make or ask you to subscribe when my subscription expired here last month. So I've got to do that. I'll probably do that after the radio show is go ahead and renew again for another couple of years, because every other month when that comes, it's great reading material. Now that we're on the homestead, it's so much of it applies to our everyday and daily life here. So in fact, I just want to make sure everybody realizes that a subscription to Back Home Magazine would be a fabulous, fabulous Christmas gift for your friends. Yep, a Christmas gift. It'd be fabulous. Subscription to Back Home Magazine. Yep, I said it. Christmas. YP 386, since he loves this so much, he just loves to cluck along. I hadn't played this one in a little while. I think I'll go ahead and play this just for you, BYC. Okay, I'm not sure if our listeners are listening. you can buy this CD at eggcartons.com. They've been a longtime sponsor of the show. I believe they have, last time I checked, two different CDs with the clucking carols, if you want to say that. So So yes, you can, if you're interested in having this, if you are all about backyard poultry or chickens and whatnot, and you invite your friends over for a nice little holiday party, Christmas gathering, and you want to go over to the stereo and put in some mood music for the holidays, then you can do that. Again, last I checked, they had a couple of different holiday Christmas clucking carol CDs. Again, that's over at eggcartons.com, so very good. Hey, you know what? Not everybody, no, don't, stay seated. Stay seated, or, you know, you try to contain your enthusiasm. Ready for this? You, in fact, you can share your enthusiasm in the chat room. I've got a prize to give away. Yes, I do. In fact, I may try to give away two prizes right here and right now. It was a really fun show. I got a lot of folks in the chat room, a lot of people listening live today. So well, I'm going to give a couple of prizes away. So being today is Thursday, Thursdays are brought to you by critter-cages.com. And we happen to have an awesome prize. And again, this prize comes out of California. It takes a little long to get there. I talked to a couple of people yesterday that had won this prize. They hadn't got it yet. And I reissued an email to them. And they said, as far as they know, if you live on the East Coast, basically what it does is it ships from California to Tennessee. I don't know where in Tennessee. And then from Tennessee, it ships out somewhere on the East Coast. So normally it takes up to maybe 30 days to get this particular prize. It's coming from California. And then I know if it's going East Coast, it ships to another location, and then it ships out from there. So maybe up to 30 days for that. But critter-cages.com, sponsoring Thursday, and I've got an awesome brooder kit to give away. Now, if you have won anything from critter-cages.com in the last 60 days, you're not eligible, okay? So if you won anything, whether you won the gift certificate from them or you won another brooder kit or another prize that we've given away, if you've won anything from critter-cages.com in the last 60 days, you're not eligible to play this contest, but we may have another one here after this one. And we'll have that. Let's see. Autumn. Who's Autumn? It says Autumn. I don't even see Autumn in the chat room. And since someone said something, Autumn, stop stalking Andy. Jessica, what is that all about? Oh, okay. Your homeschool student. Autumn is your daughter, homeschool student. And stalling. Oh, okay. Autumn says stop. I thought you said stalking. I said, who's stalking me? Wouldn't be the first time. gotcha. Stalling. I need to put my glasses on. Oh my goodness. I'm glad I don't have a lot of that though. What's that guy? I guess your daughter's probably, what, about 12, 14, Jessica? So I guess I don't have to deal with the, what's his name? Beaver? What's his name? Justin Beaver, whatever it is. Yeah, I guess I'm glad I don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. Yeah, there you go, Jessica. There you go. All righty, so let's give away this prize. I'm trying to think of maybe we'll just have a fun, easy, you know, let's roll with it type of trivia question today. And then chicken trivia question, very simple. But remember, if you've won something from Critter-Cages in the last 60 days, you're not eligible. Everybody else, you're going to want to call in. So let me read the question, then I'll give you the number, and you can call in. And okay. Already in the chat room, New Dawn Farm Girls posting in the winning caller. So we will. We'll take caller number 30. We've got a phone bank of 50 open lines. The number to call, if you know the answer to the question, go ahead and write this down so you'll be ready. 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Okay. And the question is, and your longtime listeners will know where I'm going with this. I don't think she's in the chat room today, but she might be. Also known as the decoration thingy. That cracks me up. Also known as the decoration thingy. What is the red thing on top of a chicken's head? Okay, yep. Jessica, you may not have been in here that day, but yes. Also known as, at least according to one of our awesome chicken fans and Facebook followers and all that good stuff, that's why I say this, also known as the decoration thingy on top of a chicken's head, what is it called? 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Give us a call right now. It's too simple. I know it's simple, but it's fun because a young lady, and I'm trying to think who it was who said that, she called it the decoration thingy on top of their head. So she was a brand new chicken lover, backyard chicken keeper, and so you know, fun. But we're taking caller number 30 right now, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. If you know what the technical term of the decoration thingy on top of the chicken's head, what it's called. So just want to give us a call, 347-637-3237. Take just a second. Somebody pick caller number 30. So we've got to wait for the phone bank to fill up. So let me get over here. It's not a problem. It's filling up pretty quickly. No big deal there. Now I just got to scroll down all the way to caller number 30. If you haven't won anything from critter-cages.com in the last 60 days, you are eligible to win this. So let's go to the phone lines right now. Caller number 30, you are live on the air, calling in from area code 609. State your name. Tell us where you're calling in from.
It's Dragonfire from New Jersey.
Joyzy?
I'm Joyzy.
How you guys doing up there?
Oh, we guys is fine. I don't see Walter, so I guess that's me.
Yeah, is Walter in the chat room today?
No, not today.
We miss Walter.
Poor Walter.
Of course, he was so funny. I guess it was couple of years ago when Connecticut just got like every other day they were getting a foot of snow, 2 feet of snow, and he'd come in the chat room and be like, 18 more inches of snow last night. We just gave him such a hard time about that because he really got hammered with the snow up there in Connecticut.
Yeah, well, we got nothing here in Jersey last year. I mean, really.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because y'all have Jersey Shore. So, I mean, all was good as long as Snooki's around, right?
They're not Jersey Shore. They're Staten Island.
Oh, my goodness.
The
gracious.
Real Jersey Shore is nothing like Snooki.
How do I even know that, people? I don't own a television. I can't get away from it. Snooki and who's that? Paulie and, oh, my gosh, help us all. That's about as bad as Honey Boo Boo. So, okay, so let me know what is also known the decoration thing is also called what?
Okay, the little decoration thing on top of the head is called the comb.
Let me.
And
think.
The little hangy down thing. For the bottom.
Okay, and that's going to be my next question. So maybe nobody heard you because they heard the applause. So don't spoil it for us. That'll be the next prize question we'll do next, I guess. So, but yes, that is absolutely correct. Here, let me give you another shout out here.
Congratulations!
All righty,
so Gomer Pyle.
It's Gomer, yeah. So you know the drill. Just send me an email. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and name, shipping address, phone number, and email. Name, shipping address, phone number, and email, and then put the put brooder kit in the subject line, brooder kit in the subject line, and the name, shipping address, phone number, email in the email itself, and then get and then send that to me. We'll get that prize over to Carl at critter-cages.com. Normally that particular item takes about 30 days or so. So if you haven't received it in 30 days, get back with me, and we'll try to track that down. Okay, another prize we've got to give away today. How cool is that? I mean, holy cow, we're giving away so many prizes today. One might think it was Christmas. Y'all for another minute and 30 seconds. So everybody's like, but I was singing along. I was singing along. okay, gotta love it. Okay, the next prize we have is a really cool waterer. And I call it really a supplemental waterer, an inside the coop waterer. And it's really cool. A lot of people like them. They get raised when we post them on Facebook. It's called the Chicken Canteen. It's a canteen waterer. It's made out of the galvanized metal, so you cannot use apple cider vinegar in this. But this is not their primary water source. This is something that you could hang up in the coop, so maybe if they, you know, rarely they do, but if they get down off the roost in the middle of the night or early morning or right after they've been closed in and they want a little a slurp of water, they have that there inside the coop. If you keep mostly the chicken fountain is your main water source, or a 3-gallon water or 5-gallon, whatever, outside, it's fine. Maybe you keep them inside as well, but it's a good supplemental water for inside the coop. If their main source is outside, to give them that a little bit of water or access to water inside the yeah, exactly, Tater Farm, a little slurpy slurp of water in the middle of the night if they get thirsty. So it's pretty cool. and Jessica says the canteen's very good. I use it for taking the chickens when I go to sell them, so they have access to water. It's perfect. So yeah. And it's a really, really cool thing. It's from Ware Manufacturing. Ware Manufacturing produces this, and you can find it, of course, at critter-cages.com. And really, you're familiar with Ware products. All the Ware products that are in stores like Petco and PetSmart and Kmart and Walmart and Wally World and all those places, you'll see, just look at the tag, it'll say Ware Manufacturing and nice colorful logo there. So you're familiar with Ware products, whether it be for fish or guinea pigs or rabbits or mice or chinchillas or whatever, but they also have gotten into the backyard chicken market, hutches, things like that, coops. And so Ware Manufacturing is a producer of those, and you can find those all over the place, including one of our sponsors at critter-cages.com. So we've got that small canteen chicken that we're going to give away right now. If you can tell me, I need a caller in the chat room. I think I saw 12 earlier. We'll go with 12. Someone had posted in there 12. Oh, Jessica's just under 11. We'll do caller number 12. 347-637-3237. And if you've called in, I'm going to go ahead and have to delete you real quick. I'm going to have to clear the phone lines to make it fair for everybody. So you probably just got hung up on. So it is clear. 347-637-3237. Okay. This is also the same wonderful young lady. Also known as the Wobbly Gobblies. What are the red dangling things under the chicken's chin area, or under their neck, under their beak, whatever you want to describe it, around there, you know, that hangs down, the red fleshy things that hang down underneath the chicken's neck and beak and mouth? what are those things called? Also known by some people as the Wobbly Gobblies, okay? Also known as the Wobbly Gobblies. That was such a fun show when she was on, and I can't remember who it was to save my life. She still comes in the show in the chat room occasionally. So 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237, and that is the question. The red fleshy things that hang underneath the chicken's neck, the head, the beak, the mouth, what are those called? They're also called by some the wobbly gobblies, but we want to know the technical name of what those are called, and we'll take call number 12, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Autumn says this is way too easy. I told you I was going to make it easy today. No hard trivia questions, no hard chicken history, no of the avian bowl questions from Dr. McCrae, 4-H team leader, or anything like that. Just some pretty simple ones. Fun. Want everybody to have a chance to win. Again, if you've won anything from Where in the last 60 days, you're not eligible. So just go ahead and hang up the phone. But if you would like to, and it's a really cool product. It's a chicken canteen. So 347-637-3237. What are the red fleshy things that hang underneath the chicken's neck there, flop around? Other than the wobbly gobblies that they are known by some. All righty, let me get over here to the phone lines. We'll take this winner, and it'll be time to kind of wrap up this show. Scroll down a little bit. There we go. Going to the phone line. Let me count up 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Wasn't that on Sesame Street? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Here we go. Call number 12, you're live on the air with the Chicken Whisperer, calling in from area code. Let me tell you who caller number 11 was first. Caller number 11 was area code 980. 980 was 11, and caller number 13 was 602. So y'all are so close, but no cigar. But caller from area code 740, you're live. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from.
Hello?
Hello. You're live on the air. Tell us your name and where you're calling from, please.
Neva from Ohio.
Neva from Ohio. Tell me what the red fleshy things are that hang kind of under the chicken's neck. They're not known as the wobbly gobbly, but what are they known as?
Waddles.
Waddles. Let me think if that's the answer that we're looking for. Yay! Congratulations. Yes, they are waddles, and you've got that 100% correct. And oh, that's hilarious. Oh, that's so funny, Jessica. Okay. Well, hey, congratulations. You need to send me an email if you want your prize. That's hilarious. You said that would happen, too. So, but that's why I announced caller number 11 and caller number 13, just so to let you know how close people were. And you said it would happen. Alrighty. I said 12. I saw 12 earlier. You came up with 11. I said 12 first, so I had to go with 12. So caller number 12. Hey, send me an email, Neva, up there in Ohio. Thank you very much for listening. Chicken Whisperer at chickenwhisperer.net. Chicken Whisperer at chickenwhisperer.net. And send me an email. Put you can put waterer, chicken, metal waterer in the subject line, metal waterer in the subject line. That'll be fine. Or ware manufacturing in the subject line. But most importantly, I need your name, shipping address, phone number, and email. Okay? Name, very important. I get all this. Name, shipping address, your phone number, and your email. If you'll type in your email within the email under your phone number, that'll be very helpful. Copy and paste that or forward it over to Heather is our contact over at Ware Manufacturing. So we thank you for participating. Hey, it was a great show today. We gave away a couple of cool prizes. Awesome. Thanks to our sponsors. We had a great guest today, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, giving us all kinds of great tips about how to freeze produce properly for storage. So that was great. I learned a lot, and I hope you did as well. Guess what? Tomorrow is Fun Friday. I tell you, if you can listen every day at noon, your day will go by faster, and next thing you know, it'll be Friday, just like this week. Wow, where did the week go? So, yep, tomorrow will be another episode of Fun Friday. I look forward to being here. I hope you'll look forward to being here. And if you love the show, tell your friends. Say something about it on Facebook or Twitter. Put a link up. Hey, the more the merrier. And we would love for you to do that if you love the show. And we hope you can come back tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and enjoy the show and learn more about our passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Until tomorrow, we hope you have a wonderful day with family and friends. Be safe, and we'll see you here tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.